Cause once this land was heaven on earth, green hills were all you could see. But now it's soot and steel and brick, so it looks more like hell to me. And each day brings more and more suffering, and each night is silence and fear. And I wake to the sound of your voice, but you're not here. Why aren't you here?
What's up, all you beautiful creatures of the night? Here we are. We've come to the end of the road. I was going to sing that one from Boys to Men, but I decided to spare you. Unless you really want me to. I can do it.
It's up to you.
And now we've come to the end of the road. And I can't let go. All right, that's enough. But
even though Ethan could, bastard.
Snap, 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 snap. You are listening to The Demimond. This is a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Sam.
All right, so I want to thank everybody for putting all the reviews in. We hit our number, and we kind of kept going. You know, it's kind of bittersweet because I'm super happy that we hit it, but I know now that I have to give my piece away, and it feels like when Vanessa died all over again. So thank you, and an awesome job. I mean, it's wonderful. You still have a few days to get some reviews in. If you want to win it, go on our Twitter page and our Facebook page to see it. It's at No Ship. Is it No Ship Network on Twitter, at Molten Forge on Twitter, and then No Ship Network on Facebook. So thanks again, everybody. There's still a few days when you know, just to go on iTunes, give us some stars, give us a review, you know. So thanks again for an amazing season.
And a little word on reviews. That's probably our favorite thing to do, is to read reviews. People, you know, that people write. When they give us a good review and they write a little blurb about it, it really makes our day. Because everybody has shitty days at work or just life in general, and you read that and somebody appreciates what you do, and it just brightens everything up. And you know, you don't have to, if you're tuning into this sometime down the road, maybe like in the fall or the winter or next year or whatever, and you're new to Penny Dreadful and you get to this point, you can still leave a review. It still helps us out. It still helps out the No Ship Network in general. So please feel free, and thank you.
Okay, so let's just get everything off our chest first about these episodes, which turn out to be the final episodes of the series, as some of us were fearing. So who wants to go first?
I'll go. So I went through like the five stages of grief on this one, you know? There was the denial. It was like, this is bullshit. You know, I couldn't believe it, because they lead up to it in the second episode. And it's like, is he, come on, you know, and then anger, because Ethan's a fucking moron, you know, and I was mad at the show. I was mad at everybody. Now, luckily, I was sitting there watching it by myself, and my wife had gone to bed. So I was mad by myself.
Aww.
Maybe the cats too. I know. And then I started like, thinking, you know, the third stage is bargaining, where you're like, okay, well, maybe if, you know, I had put more stuff online earlier, we could have saved the show, you know. And then depression, you know, the day after, I was just sad, because it's like, well, fuck, you know, maybe this podcast is going to come to an end. And then finally acceptance, which hasn't come yet. So hopefully in the next few days after we talk about it, I'll finally accept that it's over. But I think there could be possibilities of Netflix and Hulu picking it up, because it wasn't called the Vanessa Ives show.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So hopefully we still have some characters out there. Lyle could get his own series for a whole season, just him and Imhotep. I would watch it. Some of the fans maybe. So I'm like trying to figure out ways to make myself feel better of possible spinoffs.
One of our listeners had mentioned they'd watch a spinoff of Dr. Seward and Catriona Hartigan. I second that. I would definitely watch that.
I would watch it, but I would rather have all the Dreadfuls back together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With the same sort of atmosphere.
Frankenstein, and then they could finally maybe give us something with Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and not that bullshit line they gave us at the end of the second episode that was like, oh, Lord Hyde. I was like, is Darth Vader in the house? You know, what the fuck? It was ridiculous. I mean, so many, it's like they crapped the last episode out on purpose just to shove it in the Showtime's face. Like, you're going to make us end it. We're going to give you the worst possible ending we can.
So how did you feel?
Well, it's funny that you brought up the five stages of grief. I couldn't remember what they all were, but I did remember the first one was denial, and I definitely went through that, and I definitely went through anger, and I'm still in the depression phase, and I even wrote this on Facebook, but I mean, ultimately, I'm heartbroken. I'm not really sure how much I can trust my initial reaction to the final two, because I was operating under the delusion of a hope that Penny Dreadful was not over. But with that said, my initial reaction was love and grief. I felt they did a good job. I felt affection for all of our key characters and also felt extremely blue. But by the following morning, I would be seeing red. My problem first arose at the title card that said the end.
Right.
Even though the show's finality was literally spelled out to me, my mind was working quickly to refute this and trying to come up with alternatives as to what the end could it alternatively mean, not the end, surely. Surely because why introduce Catriona Hardigan? Why introduce Hyde? We didn't even get to see the true Hyde manifestation, not with Balfour, not with Lily, and certainly not with Lord Hyde. Dorian's flashy rings promised that we would eventually see his demise, because that's the only thing that's recognizable when you see his shriveled corpse. Ethan and Lily do not encounter each other at all. What the fuck? I wanted to see that. And speaking of Ethan, all that time in America, for what? I realize he needed to wrestle his own demons, and I'm okay with that if there was another season. It now feels like a speed bump placed inadvertently in the fast lane. Also, the argument that Ethan needed to be absent so Dracula could make his move does not hold water for me anymore. I would have rather they stuck to the source material and have Dracula be feeding on Vanessa, Bram Stoker style, like an unstoppable, unseeable wraith in the night. Catriona could have filled the Van Helsing shoes really well. Is my idea derivative? Yes, but it feels more like a series ending plot, one that could build and climax into a tightly woven coil, and its resulting tension would have been much more prolonged, therefore more satisfying. It would make Ives' choice of self-sacrifice that much more credible to me. Mm-hmm. Just to tie up my anger, when I watched John Logan's explanation of how he always planned to write only three seasons, I internally harumphed because I detected defensiveness and not so much truth in this statement. Furthermore, I am annoyed at the "it was foretold" sentiment that is now being bandied about as if they're trying to put the onus back in our lap, as if we should have known. No, don't do that. Don't be dicks on top of it. Because I found an interview where John Logan mentions a season four when discussing how he may explore Ethan's backstory. So that's bullshit.
Well, I'm back to being pissed again.
Yeah, sorry.
That was really good.
That encapsulated a lot of how I feel about things. I'm pretty much on the same page with her all the way. I would say that, to me, this was a 75% type thing. And what I mean by that is that I'm okay with the show ending right now. I really, really wish that it wouldn't. But if there's no chance that it's going to come back, we get an ending that at least I would have rather had this than in just a season three ending. And then we never, you know, like a cliffhanger or something like that.
Yeah.
And then we never get anything else. And we have to catch up to it with graphic novels or what have you.
Exactly.
You know, but I feel like we only went 75% with this. And when I say we, I don't mean me or us. I mean the people who write and produce the show. They could have gone a little bit further with each of the characters towards a better and more satisfying ending. I don't think it was horrible. I don't hate it. I actually really enjoyed these two episodes a lot, just like I have this whole season. But the 75% things comes into effect when you don't really feel like there's any resolution for John Clare. He never got to smash Dracula's face in. We never found out how he died, what happened, what this accident was. Maybe it was always going to be irrelevant to the plot, or perhaps it was going to have something to do with Dracula, like we had said. We don't know now. We're never going to know. I think everybody is kind of left in the lurch with the whole Hecate and Rusk just being these sideshow characters when they seem to have so much potential before that. We'll get into
and Hyde too.
Right.
I mean, yeah. Hyde fits right in that group.
Yeah.
What's the point?
Right. So there's a lot of that. I feel like they went 75% of the way with that. So I enjoyed that 75% thoroughly, but the 25% that is missing kicks me in the dick. And that's how I feel about it. That's the God's honest truth. So I end up being still in love with this show, still in love with the characters, and thoroughly enjoying everything about it. It has such phenomenal rewatch value that I'll probably watch this series over I don't know how many times. But, M was playing the very first episode of season one right before we started the podcast, actually. And it was crazy to see how young and healthy Victor actually looked. I mean, healthy in his pasty, pale scientist who never sees the light of day type way, but, you know, a lot better than he ended up looking. But, that 25% is just going to stick in my craw, and it's not going to be redeemable unless Hulu or Netflix or some other cable picks it up and goes forward with it, which I would be totally behind.
Well, it was good for me all the way up until all the Dreadfuls go into Dracula's lair. And then that some of the characters are okay to fight a bunch of vampires and look into pretty much their deaths. And then that we don't lose really any of those characters. You know, it was just like Victor survives is ridiculous because he's not a fighter. He's barely shot a gun, and then he goes in there. And then just the way that and I'm the guy that likes it when characters die. You gotta remember this. And so I should be okay with Vanessa getting it that way. I was okay with the way they ended Farscape because it was out of the blue.
Right.
You know, but this was just like, really? You know, I wouldn't let my wife die to save the world. I'm sorry. It's just how it is. I would save her. I would be selfish and she would be with me.
Yeah. That's,
you know, we would deal with it at that point. So it just, the whole that she even gives up, you know, the whole series, it's about her fighting and then she gives up all the way up until that. I thought it was great. I liked it, how they ended John Clare and his kid, everything else. I was okay with it. Just that last 20 minutes was like, oh my God, how are you going to do that? So I don't know. I agree. We're all just going to, we can make an hour of this.
Yeah.
Just us bitching ranting about these
last. Well, there's going to be more of this on our bonus podcast sure. Especially when we get into people's feedback and.
For sure. But you know what? I think we can all bring our like 10 favorite things that we love about the show too. So that way we're not shitting on it the entire
time. Let's do that. Let's
celebrate Penny Dreadful on the bonus pod. And then when we hit the feedback, still get our angst out, you know?
Okay.
All right.
Because this season was good all the way up until the last
episode. Agreed.
All right. I like that idea. We'll the three of us will sit down and write our 10 favorite things about Penny Dreadful.
Right.
Okay. Recap time. So how we're going to do this is we're going to cover episode 8 and then we'll go into episode 9 and we'll let you know that we are going into that. So if for some reason you hadn't watched episode 9 yet, even though you've been spoiled by our rant at the beginning, you can stop. And wait to listen to that. We are now discussing Penny Dreadful Season 3, penultimate episode of the series, Perpetual Night, written by Christy Wilson-Carnes and directed by Damon Thomas. This episode opens with Ives' voice again narrating the end of day's prophecy over a darkened and miasmic London. Dr. Seward arrives to her office from the oppressive outdoors and discovers Renfield listening to her wax cylinders. Renfield is listening to Ives talk about Ethan being the most moral man she knows and that her destiny is intertwined with his somehow. Dr. Seward learns that Renfield is working for his master. He confirms that his master's name is Dracula. Renfield says that Ives is Dracula's bride and that they sup on the blood. I would like to see a comic depict this part that we did not get to see in the series. Is Ives actually supping on blood?
Yeah. I didn't even think of that till now.
I know.
Because I always think he's being metaphorical. And, you know, everything that's been said in that way has always been in reference to the future of how it's going to be when she takes the Amunet stance. And now that she's doing it, it's like, what kind of nasty shit did she get up to? That's a good point.
Yeah.
Renfield eats a toad and gives his resignation. Dr. Seward fights for her life, first stabbing Renfield with a dagger and then finally knocking him out with a heavy ashtray. Toads are indeed coming up the drains.
Not toads.
Oh, no. I mean, they technically are creatures of the night, but it's like the okay night.
Yeah, they're not
the scary night.
They're not intimidating.
I mean, if these were night crawlers or spiders or like eels or snakes or something icky, you know, it'd be a little bit
cockroaches.
Cockroaches, yeah.
Everybody hates a cockroach. Let cockroaches come out, and I would have even been like, oh, all right, that's enough. Toads made me laugh. All I could think of was like country guys going, just gigging them, you know, like, all right, we're just going to get me some toads to eat. You know, it's not, it doesn't seem that scary to me. Not toads, you know, like poisonous frogs. You know, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Those were fat toads.
Renfield does such a great job in these two episodes, though.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that guy stepped his acting up, like the makeup and everything on him. He looked fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Samuel Barnett.
Samuel Barnett. Congratulations on a job well done.
Could he be the best Renfield?
He's, yeah. I mean, Tom Waits does a good job in the movie, Coppola's movie, but I like Samuel Barnett as Renfield because I felt many emotions for him. You know, I was put off by him, but, you know, I also felt pity. And it was amazing with some of the lighting they did with him because sometimes he looked haunted and at times he looked pitiful and sometimes even kind of cute, which is like, ugh. But
yeah, I thought that too. No, I'm kidding.
I've always thought he was cute. I just, you know.
Like, sometimes he looked like the Michael from Grease 2 to me, just depending on the lightning, on the lighting.
Dr. Seward needs a Coo-Rider. Coo-Rider.
C-O-O-L-R-I-D-E-R.
That's another thing that's bothering me. Why even have her come back?
Well, because she needs to be the one to display a power we didn't realize she had, where she can actually go into somebody's mind and be able to see.
Which is unexplained, but still pretty badass.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's all right.
Even though she doesn't believe in magic, but you can go into someone in a trance, you know.
Exactly. Good point.
Fucking ridiculous.
So now after the opening credits, Ethan, Malcolm, Marie, and Kayatene disembark from the steamship and discover a fog-filled, desolate London. They can't get a cab, and there are rats just roaming around willy-nilly. I guess they're not roaming around willy-nilly. They actually are rats on a mission. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, they're trying to kill themselves. But you guys noticed something? No one else got off that big-ass ship with them?
Yeah. That's...
it was like a steam liner. No
there was
one.
No line or anything. It was just the three of them.
Uh-huh. No one. No crew. Did they kill them all?
Did they wait for everybody else to depart because they wanted to see the end of the credits of the movie they were watching? Or what's going on there?
Yeah.
You know, and then K-Town turns to Malcolm Murray and he's like, Ghostbusters 2 is not that bad of a film. It has right. It has its merits.
Well, I mean, if you had people getting off that steamship, what it would have looked like. You had to, it probably would have been hard to execute having people, I mean, maybe like people coughing and hacking, pulling their skirts up to their face. I could see that.
Mm-hmm. It was the start of the disconnect for me. Because it's like London's, the rest of the series itself has been very two period, you know, with the clothing and the amount of people in London, even down to the insane asylum. And then you get to these last couple episodes and all of a sudden they're just all gone. You know, it's like, wait a second. How do you clear out a major city? Now I get it. It's been a while. People might be hiding, but the people on the boat would have been a prime example of just a little bit to kind of keep that realism going. Cause to me, it just looked like fog. If you had people coming off who weren't gifted, like Ethan and them coughing and getting sick and running back on the ship and cowering, it would be understandable. It would just be a little, it's the little things that the show usually does that I missed in these two episodes.
Maybe they have a limited extra budget per episode or something like that, because there was a lot of thralls in this one.
That's true. That's true. But those people would have done extra scenes. Come on. Yeah. Come on.
I would have done it for free. I mean, I would have been on a day off and been like, hey, you want to be in Penny Dreadful? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Bring the families in. Yeah. Something. Just give me like 15 people to get off that boat. That's it.
I would have been one of those naked people hanging from a hook. I would have done that. But you can only see my butt. That's it. I'm not going to go
the a lot
other
of
way.
Butts. Yeah. No, there wasn't just butts, but some of the butts were weird looking.
Yeah, well, not all butts are perfect.
I'm aware of that, but some of them.
Especially when people have been chewing on them.
Yeah, I guess they
saggy chewed up butts.
Lost some of their tautness. Yeah. They arrive home finally to Malcolm Marie's estate and they search the place for Vanessa. Ethan runs to her room and finds a message meant for him personally, a mutilated wolf corpse. Ethan tells K-Town that she is not here, but K-Town says something is. Malcolm Marie mistakes one of those somethings for Vanessa and gets bit for doing so. More thralls come out of hiding and attack. Catriona arrives quickly on the scene, shooting. When her little gun ceases to be helpful, she attacks with knives. She saves Ethan's life by throwing a dagger and soon saves Malcolm Murray by cauterizing his bite wound, which we'll get to later. While Malcolm Murray is unconscious, introductions are made, and Ethan decides he needs to get Dr. Frankenstein for Malcolm Murray. Catriona warns Ethan about protecting himself against the pestilent air. He does not heed her advice, but we learn how lethal the fog has been for London. And they all learn that they share the need to locate Miss Ives, and Catan himself does not heed the warnings against bad air and strolls out the door with his own bad self.
I like that. He was just kind of like, he's like, don't even talk to me, bitch. I'm going. I'm following this guy.
I know.
That's my son.
He's impervious to all things. Desert, snake bites, pestilent fog.
Wolf bites.
Yeah.
Now with Lily, Vicky and Jekyll prepare for her transformation. Lily tries to get a last dance or kiss from Dorian to no avail. Dorian leaves to go do some house cleaning. Lily raises Jekyll's ire, calling him Vicky's assistant. She wants to be alone with Vicky. Against Jekyll's protest, Vicky tells Jekyll to give them a moment. And first, Lily tries the water gambit. Beautifully acted and directed, but it was only an appetizer for what is to come.
So, did anybody else feel the menace that she had when she was talking to Dorian? She was like, one last kiss before you go. He's just like...
He scoffs at her.
I'll live if you do whatever you're going to do, but I'm not putting myself through that because you're like super strong. So,
yeah.
Dorian was at his pinnacle in these last two episodes.
Yes.
I guess last
Absolutely.
Three.
Absolutely.
Last three. Yeah. It started last episode when he just was like, that's it. Mm-hmm. I've had enough of your shit.
Well, Lily was, these scenes with her, I thought were excellent. Mm-hmm. You know, I actually enjoyed it because it played into Victor's actual character. Like, he just didn't have the balls to do it, you know, and he felt terrible and it was nice. I actually like this episode itself. There are some holes that we will discuss, but that and Catriona.
Yeah.
In the last scene, she was my favorite thing about the entire scene because she's so swift and badass that she could have a series by herself. I would totally watch it.
She's realistic too, it's realistic, the portrayal of it, because she's shooting all these guys and then her gun clicks, it's empty. And then the look in her eyes like, oh shit, you know, I'm going to have to do hand to hand now. And then she starts throwing knives and everything. So it isn't like she's not totally just unaffected by any of it. She realizes when her life is at stake. So
yeah, she's a badass and it's wonderful. Like, it's just nice. You know, there are some bright points to these darker episodes. So that's cool.
Yeah. It's just, when you realize the series is ending, though, I don't want to harp on that too much, but it's just like, what was the point of introducing her? Like, late.
There's a narrow...
I know, bittersweet.
Everything focuses down whenever you have the last couple episodes of a season or a series, and you know it. That's why the writers and the producers and everything think that they can get away, and usually are able to get away with things like having a steamship pull up to a dock in London and then have only three people get off of it. When they know that there's at least got to be a captain and a crew, if not, you know, however many dozens or hundreds of other passengers. So we notice it because we're podcasting on it and that's what we do. But I think that they kind of get a pass on that because it's the last episode. So we're just focusing in on this. And one of the negative sides of that as a viewer is you start to look at everything that doesn't affect the very core of the story as being superfluous and like, is that necessary? Why did we have to go there? Why are we doing this? How's this going to pay out? And it doesn't really all the time.
Well, Game of Thrones has made a franchise out of that.
Oh.
You know, none of it matters.
So now, meanwhile, at JC's humblest abode, he talks of what the future may bring for his family. His wife will no longer work at the factory, and they will live in their old home, and they will visit Kensington Gardens as well as the Scottish Highlands. Jack's illness is evidently worse. He coughs up blood at the table and is too tired to eat. John Clare helps his frail son to bed, promising that they shall go everywhere together.
It was heartbreaking.
It's sad and it's hard to watch, and it doesn't get any easier on further viewings. But, I mean, it was being telegraphed to you. This kid is going to die.
Yeah. Because,
you know, they're trying to have this family life and make it like things are going to be better. It's like, you know what show you're in? Nothing's going to get better. Mm-mm. This is Penny Dreadful.
Especially not for him, unfortunately. Yeah.
And his mom must be used to seeing him hack up blood or something.
She's in denial. She's in denial because he's hacking up blood from his tuberculosis. And she's like, it's this foul air. No, it's not. The air, the air might be killing people, but the kid was already sick before that. Come on.
Well, and rightly so, her husband was back all of a sudden, too. So she has the right to be a little
skeptical.
In Crazy Town too, though, you know.
Well, she's probably already had the wheels turning in her head about as far as what she would like for John Clare to do, the request she gives him later.
And it totally makes sense. Like, when they actually did that, I was like, see, that's a good reaction, because who wouldn't be like, no, you can bring him back. No. Well,
John Clare is like, this is Pet Sematary all over again. We're not going to do this. This is bad.
Right.
So now Dorian arrives home and calmly and like a boss tells the ladies of the night to get out. He tells them to take all the gifts he has given them. Justine asks after Lily and can't believe that Lily has been vanquished. She stabs Dorian and it goes as all of us would expect. The whores make like an exodus and
the whores make like trees and leave.
And Dorian tells Justine that she is lucky for the glimpse of liberty that she did get. Justine says she can't go back. She would rather die on her feet than live on her knees. After being assured it is truly her wish, Dorian snaps Justine's neck. It was interesting to me that as I observed my own feelings during this scene, because I thought I had wanted Justine to go out more violently, but this actually felt right, especially after her appeal to him. I think I love Dorian more these last two episodes than I have during the entire series.
This little girl is a man hater. She already stabbed him once. And if she's willing to go out, why not go out in a fight? I don't see her just laying down. I just can't. I can't possibly imagine it. You know, at least I know I wouldn't. You know, if you're going to save me from that kind of torment and all that, and then you're going to let a man break your neck, at least do it fighting. Don't just go limp and be killed. I wanted her to go out in a fight, period.
I would have liked to have seen that as well. Kind of, I thought it was poetic in a way, the way that she did go out, and it was beautifully shot and scripted and mm-hmm. everything.
Oh, but I agree.
My personal tastes tend towards something like her grabbing a knife and coming at him like full charge, and he has to defend himself, and he does some sort of like ancient good-looking guy jiu-jitsu move, and just you know cracks her head open mm-hmm. on the marble.
Yeah, like her freak out, maybe like throw some candles and start a fire, which would really fuck him up because of his painting. Oh, just something.
Like she tries to cause all the damage on the way out. Like, I'm going to fuck your shit up.
Yeah, just get mad and be like, fuck you. Just break shit. And then he's got to go over there and be like, shh, and break her neck. But that she went limp. It's like, come on.
Well, I see the appeal of what you're saying. This is somebody who was afraid to go back out and live the life that she had. And what he was talking about, her being lucky that she got the glimpse of liberty, I think there's truth to that because there was no other alternative. So her anger mm-hmm. at men almost makes sense to me because it's coming from a place of fear. So she was fighting for that dominance within this new world that she thought that she was going to get to live in. And then now it's just gone because Lily was that world and now it's gone. And so I think she just threw up that surrender flag and she didn't have any other choice.
Yeah, that
I know.
That makes the most sense.
I just wanted something else.
Yeah, that. See, I agree with both of you because what Em is saying makes perfect sense. It's written, and yeah.
But you're talking about someone who's like uneducated and had been abused. You think that if she was already living with that kind of fear, and she knew she was going to go out, that she would just explode. You know what I mean? And it doesn't have to be like fighting with him, but just explode in general. You know, just that she laid down just didn't seem in character. I mean, I guess, but she never liked Dorian, so that she was like, oh, okay, Dorian, you do it because I know you can do that for me. It's ridiculous to me. It's like, come on. And now if it was Lily, I could understand, but that it's her, it's like,
I mean, is it,
or him?
Is it possible that her vision of him shifted when she stabbed him and he didn't die or fall down? I mean, do you think something in her mind shifted and she was all now in awe of him and realized that he had some sort of power that he...
Well, it's like put it this way. It's like a caged animal. That's the way I looked at her, kind of like a furious animal. That's so that doing all this and making her not want to leave, it would be like putting her in the corner. And I know you don't put baby in the corner, but you do. And she fights to grip on everything she can. Like, I'm not going back to that. I'm going to fight with all my might. You know, that she just lays down is insane to me. It doesn't fit for me, for what I had in my mind for her. It's beautiful. I mean, the whole scene is. And then later on when we come back and we see her laying there and Dorian's still kind of creepy looking at her dead body, which we don't know what he did with her. You know, that... I mean, it is Dorian. He might have been like, well, I've never done this before, you know? But it just didn't, it didn't seem like that character, because she was so much of, and I liked it a lot, the way that they wrote her part, that she was willing to stand up to him before, that she was willing to go out and kill these people. She was like a ferocious animal, that she just laid down, just like Vanessa later on, bothered me, because it kind of takes back what they made these characters to be throughout the show. You know, it's like, I don't buy that they're just going to lay down. Please kill me. No, I can't. I refuse. It was beautiful, for sure.
I don't know what else to say beyond what I've said, except that they, you know, they did rescue her from the cusp of death. And so they were, in a way, her last saving grace. And then now, when they are no longer that anymore, what else does she have left but death?
I know. I mean, I know. I'm just fighting.
It's okay. It doesn't, we can agree to disagree. I mean, that's what we do.
But it, I mean, I'm going to agree with you that it was a beautiful scene. I mean, the two actors did an amazing job. It's just, you know, hey, I'm still, you riled the anger back up.
Good.
It's going to keep coming back up.
Get some passion.
That's right.
It's going to keep coming back up.
Yeah, it'll keep,
the anger.
No, I know. Like vomit.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like GERD.
I like that word.
GERD.
Yeah, it's disgusting. Sorry.
It is. It's like curd.
Okay, so now Ethan arrives at Victor's doorstep, only to find him not home. A young thrall sits in Vicky's stairwell and is willing to take Ethan to Vicky. Ethan follows.
What happened to the creepy kid thrall who was playing with the ball and the jacks? That's not the same one, obviously, so it's like, why wouldn't they just use that kid? Did he have to go do a Broadway play as well?
Yeah, good question. Did he, we didn't see him.
This is like substitute
killed
creepy
or anything,
kid.
Did we?
No, I don't. If no. I don't think so.
Maybe he had more important jobs to do, and this was like a kid that's trying to prove himself.
When he found out in mid-season that the series was ending, because that's probably when the truth came out to the crew, he was just like, I'm out!
Yeah, that kid
was, I have no future here!
Yeah, that kid was all like, psh, screw you guys.
He started bitching about the writing. Fuck this job.
I'm gonna go be on the next season of Vikings. Fuck y'all.
At the Malcolm Murray estate, Malcolm Murray awakens and Catriona is there to fill him in. But first, they kind of flirt. At least that's the way I took it. Because,
for sure.
You know, she's telling him to sit and they talk of pride and there's an allusion to spanking. I smelled setup for a romance between the two, even though it is definitely a May December, but that's how Hollywood does these things.
No, I totally agree because he's got a tendency towards strong women. Look at last season. So I totally thought it, too. I was like, all right, Malcolm Murray's going to get some in the end of days. It's good.
Chill out with that, you guys. That's her grandfather. Remember. Remember.
So? So? Maybe she's into that.
Be an old boy thing. He don't know. So, let's see.
Plus, he's distinguished. He's a badass. I mean, what's not to like?
He's a DILF. So, there you go.
GILF.
There you go. A GILF, even. Yeah.
So she brings Malcolm Murray up to date about Ives and the vampire that was hunting her. Malcolm Murray does not know what to make of Catriona, and she suggests that she is a friend. A knock at the door, and Dr. Seward arrives looking for Vanessa. After their wary introductions, Dr. Seward offers to lead them to someone who may be able to tell them where Ives is located. They are going to go among the demons.
Bedlam time.
Yes. So I see you're scrunching up your face over there. You want to make a complaint?
Yeah.
File a complaint now.
I would like to file a complaint that he's in Bedlam. There's another disconnect for me. The city's had hundreds of people die. It seems to be in chaos. But there's dudes in white coats taking people to Bedlam still when there's crazy thralls running around the city eating people. She should have had him tied up in her office. I would have been fine with it.
Well, they had to have him meet Dr. Frankenstein.
They had to what?
They had to have the cute meat with Dr. Frankenstein later.
Right? I mean,
the what meat?
The cute meat. That's just stupid. I'm just trying to make a joke. But
I just thought it was a reference to something I wasn't getting. That's why I was like, wait a minute.
It's usually meat. Like reference for like, or what you call like a couple meeting in a romantic comedy or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, we've been through some hurricanes before. Three of us, right?
Yeah.
Down here. And when shit goes down, it's not exactly easy to get the police and the hospital to come and help you. You hear horror stories all the time, you know, so that maybe because we've been through that, it looked like they were in a state of like panic and everything going wrong. So during a disaster, I doubt that Bedlam would still be up and running. I think it would be, I don't see the people running it still going in other than Victor and Hyde. Yeah. Going in there and doing their jobs because they're freaks, but I just did. I thought that he should have just been tied up in her office, but that's little. It's just one of those things, you know, where I'm on a nitpick. It was another disconnect for me. Like, what's he doing back in? What's he doing in Bedlam?
You know? Well, I can see the medical staff being there. I mean, I don't know what the rules are back in Victorian period, but I know I know people who work in as nurses and things like that. And no matter what, even if it's flooding outside, they're trying to get to work or they'll get fired.
That's true.
So I don't know, but the logistics of her getting Renfield to Bedlam, that's what I don't buy that, because she would have to have somebody help her do that. They probably have a skeleton crew, you know.
Well, and you know, I'm talking my way through this. Maybe because she is a shrink, that she has like people that she can get a hold of quickly that'll take a patient to Bedlam. You know,
on a normal day.
I'm
okay.
Yeah.
I'm better. Yeah, on a normal day, I can make it. I can make it work for me now. I'm okay now.
You know. Okay. So, anything else on that before we move on?
No.
So after the water gambit fails and Victor's serum is ready, Lily looks especially distraught and decides to appeal to Vicky with truth. She does not want to be unmade. She says she is the sum of one woman's days and no less. Let her be who she is. He still insists that he can take the pain away. Victor is moved by her story, thankfully. So I didn't want to sit there and try to rephrase everything she said, because I feel like I would not do it justice, because that was an amazing piece of acting. I know everybody agrees with this. It's all
the highlight of the
social
episode, really.
Media.
Oh, absolutely. It was the highlight of the episode.
Acting-wise, yeah. Action-wise, it's later on, but acting-wise, this was it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Billy Piper, you're amazing. And Victor is moved.
Oh, I agree.
He's moved by her, thankfully, and he frees her. He says it is too easy being monsters. Let us try to be human. And that is the plan for every dreadful now, I suppose. But we could talk about that later.
I like how she just kind of half-heartedly grabs his neck, and then just, you know, he's like, oh, shit. And then she kisses him, and then he's like, I'm out.
Come on. She should have broke his neck. Come on. Come on. All of a sudden, she's like a good guy, like all the way through. She's turned into a good guy. I don't like that.
Well, maybe they're playing with the idea that she was never evil in the first place. Like she's seeking revenge, which is acting on your negative impulses. But she starts off as an innocent, and then she's just a normal human being. She dies. She becomes innocent again in her new life, then tends towards this darkness and revenge. And then this whole situation with Victor, when she like reveals about her daughter Sarah, kind of brings the humanity back. So instead of just getting memories back, now she's getting the emotions back that actually make you a human. So she's kind of, I like to see it as her becoming complete.
Okay.
I mean, you know, she finally was able to air out this story about her daughter. Like, this is something that she's been keeping inside her and have so much shame and guilt as a result, which like, fueled her anger. And then she tells Victor and he frees her. It's like it's almost like an act of forgiveness from him. And I think maybe this is something that's calming to her, and it takes the anger out of her a little bit as well, because I think a lot of the anger was more self-directed, but she didn't realize it.
Yeah, but this is the guy that snuffed her out. This is the guy that brought her back to be a monster. This is the guy that's tried to kidnap her twice. This is the guy she's threatened three or four times that she's going to fucking kill if he keeps trying shit. I wanted some, like, Lagertha. I made a promise. I told you for the last fucking time I'm going to kill you. Now I'm going to do it. And that's, I like Victor. I don't want to see his character go. I think he could be a spinoff, too. But again, I just see her as the character itself, choking him out, maybe maiming him, pull a hand off him, something. But make it to where this little twerp won't fuck with you anymore, especially when you promised twice. Because if it was Lagertha, she would have killed him.
Oh, yeah, before you know, now, too.
I mean, this is the woman that not even a week ago was sending whores out to cut hands off dudes. I get she had a nice release and talked about, you know, her feelings, but I don't see her caring for Victor in the least. You know what I mean? So I'm not mad. I just thought that she should have done something other than kind of choke him. You know, like maybe put a thumb in one of his eyes and then walked out of the room. You know, but we needed his five bullets at the end of the series, so it's all right.
I can forgive bullets. It. I can forgive like what you're talking about, just for the sole fact that I think that, because I'm with M, I don't believe that Logan was going to end this after season three or with season three.
No, I agree.
So regardless of what he says. But whatever plans he had in the future for Lily, he probably had, you know, a notepad full of ideas. Mm-hmm. And one of them was to kind of make her circle complete and have her come back to being a human. So he just accelerated that. So he didn't want to stay mired in her negative mm-hmm. revenge phase. But you're right, there would have been some sort of visceral satisfaction to be gotten from her hurting him a little bit because of all the pain that he's caused her. So
yeah, like grab him so hard and break his wrist.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to heal. He would have been able to fight later on. Just kind of yank him like bad parents do to toddlers, you know? Like, just yank him so it hurts him a little bit because she's a little frustrated. But, you know, it's a small nitpick.
Shaking Victor syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
But I like the fact that it's indicated that she's had some character growth as a result. So,
oh, absolutely. She's been a fun character throughout the series. I'll give her that.
Yeah. I'm going to miss Lily. So Ethan is led into the Chinese part of town. We've established this is where everything's happening mm-hmm. at. And he is confronted by Dracula in the street. After releasing Ethan from his chokehold, Dracula tells Ethan that Ives is no one's captive. He asks Ethan to leave her in peace. Ethan knows his destiny is joined with hers and he will not stop. Dracula does not blame Ethan. He would feel the same way. He says without her, what would we have left, Ethan? He then force pushes Ethan onto the street. I don't know. Does he realize Ethan's the wolf of God at this point?
Yeah, yeah. Because remember later on, he's like talking to Vanessa about it. He's like, you know, he's prophesied to be my one true enemy or however he puts it. So I think he's known because they've talked about him.
Because
your boyfriend's coming.
He has. That's why the wolf is hanging up in Vanessa's room at Malcolm.
Exactly.
Right. And I thought about that because obviously he had to know the wolf of God was a lover because why hang it up in her bedroom? Because that would be an intimate place to go search for her. But it's like he doesn't seem to think so until after the thrall informs him that there was werewolves out in the street. And that's when he's like, wolf of God?
Well, so, the plural.
It was the second one.
The plurality of that. The plural. I think is what caught Dracula's attention and caught that thrall's attention because he was like, oh shit, there's two of them, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, who wouldn't be scared of a Willie Nelson lookalike vamp or a werewolf, you know? Awful. That was the saddest thing I've ever seen. He was the saddest werewolf I've ever seen.
He kind of looked like the pit creature from the pit Deadite the beginning of Army of Darkness. When they throw ash, you know, down in the pit.
Kind of. But if you put a bandana on him and put some of his fur into a braid and give him a guitar, it's Willie Nelson. I'm just saying. It looked ridiculous. It was like, you guys couldn't let him wolf out and have a little darker hair, you know? He is magical, you know? You don't have to make him look sad. Like, they really made his wrinkles come out. So it's like, make him look a little tougher, you know? Don't make him like an old beat up dog, you know, it was awful.
So we'll get to that here in just a minute, actually. So Dr. Seward, Malcolm Murray, and Catriona arrive at Bedlam, and Seward informs that she plans to reach inside Renfield's mind to discover Ives' location. Renfield reminds us of Fenton when he asks Malcolm Murray if he is going to beat him. He attempts to creep on Catriona, and she is having none of it. She demands to know where Ives is located. Meanwhile, Ethan is fighting thralls. Thankfully, he wolfs out and begins spilling blood. K-Town walks in onto the scene, and we see him transform into a werewolf. K-Town joins the slaughter, and then they communicate with each other in a very dog-like way.
Yeah, they like, don't they lick face? I'm just kidding.
They kind of roar at each other, and I was kind of assuming that this was werewolf speak for "What's up, dog?"
It made me feel for a second that they had done this before, like back when they fought the Americans. I don't know how else to put it. But then, of course, later on, we find out different, you know, like he didn't know. So,
Well, yeah.
He should have known that one night in the desert when he woke up and K-Town was biting him somewhere inappropriately that he was going to turn into a werewolf.
That's where, you know, Ethan developed the taste for his dalliances with Dorian, I assume.
Show me on the cowboy doll where he bit you. It doesn't have one.
It would be right here, but it's not there. All right, so that concludes our coverage of that episode. So if you, for some reason, have not watched both episodes, here's where you stop. and go watch that episode before you listen to the rest of what we have to say.
Even though you're...
Or do yourself a favor and don't watch it at all.
Oh, what?
Because it doesn't end well. I'm just kidding. You should watch it. Don't ever listen to me.
Yeah, definitely watch it. One of our listeners from another podcast wrote in saying that his wife is binging on it. I think she's somewhere in season two. And, you know, she just found out they canceled it. And I told him to tell her to finish it because overall it's a beautiful show. And
oh, for sure.
So anyway, but okay. So now we are discussing Penny Dove. All right, now we are discussing the series finale, The Blessed Dark. This one is written by John Logan and directed by Paco Cabezas. This episode opens with a woman singing to her baby in an alley. Her voice floats up, and we see Jack breathe his last breath. John Clare awakes, noticing, and rushes over to Jack's bedside. He weeps. Fade to black, and we have a new and final opening credit sequence with a sad lament composed by Tom Kitt and sung by Sophie Mead, who was the woman out there singing to her baby. A beautiful song. She has a beautiful voice.
Mm-hmm.
And this should have been a clue.
This was a clue. I knew.
It damn sure was. I agree.
That this was it whenever they did this. They've never done it before. First two seasons just had the regular credits. And this was, I was like, fuck, because each character is shown not necessarily at exactly what they're doing at the time, but close enough to it to where it's just like, here is where we're at, folks. And this is where we're going to go. So.
The London streets are now dark, and the pestilent mist still hangs in the air. A thrall scrabbles on the cobblestones, and our gaze is lifted up, and the young thrall we saw earlier with Ethan is reporting what he had seen to Dracula. After hearing the thrall describe the carnage wrought by the weremen, Dracula realizes that it is the Wolf of God responsible. He says, "So he comes for me." That's why I was wondering if he didn't realize Ethan was the Wolf of God.
Yeah, there was something I forgot to mention to you when we first hooked up. My boyfriend's the Wolf God. My bad.
he's my ex. It's not a big deal. Don't even worry about it. Yeah. But, you know, he will come back for me at some point.
So after deciding against sending more thralls after Ethan, the many thralls around begin to scrabble away and become prostrate as Ives makes her way over to Dracula. So we didn't see her at all last episode.
No.
She puts her hand, claw-like, onto his shoulder. She can smell his fear. He tells her that the Wolf of God is coming and that he has reason to fear him, being that Ethan has been foretold to be his singular enemy. Well, I would like to see that actually take place. Thank you very much.
Right.
Ive says they defy prophecies and that they make their own heaven and their own hell. Let him come. He and I should write the ending in blood, as it was always going to be.
Now, did you notice that, like, she puts her hand on his shoulder, and he goes to reach up to touch it, and she moves it away? Like, she's almost derisive of him because he's being weak or something like that. You know, she's like, I smell fear. So this isn't a trait she really wants to see in her mate. She's kind of like, look, I've committed to this bullshit, so take care of this, you know? And then...
Yeah, quit being a pussy.
Yeah, basically. And he's kind of being contemplative about it, like, well, he is the one guy that could really do me in.
Yeah, but, you know, Catriona talks about how he's, like, been fighting for centuries or, you know, thousands of years and this and that. And he, all of a sudden he's like, oh, there's the Wolf of God coming. It's like, come on, man up. I don't blame her. And then did they show Vanessa's face?
Yeah,
they did, right?
Yeah, you see just, like, the bottom quarter of her chin and nose and mouth area.
There should have been some blood around her lips, right? Just something to go, huh.
I was expecting that, you honestly. Know? I was expecting to see something macabre and disturbing in her visage, like a change. But it wasn't there, so I don't know if that's what that really meant. If it was meant to say, okay, well, she's still kind of the Vanessa that we know, and she's not completely beyond redemption yet, or we just didn't really bother with any prosthetics or makeup to make her look worse.
Yeah. Just a little bit, just like maybe even just a little trickle. Like I've been eating motherfuckers today.
Well, you know? I think there was meant to be more, and this is evidence that it has been truncated because I think we would have had a season of her being dark, and I think
that would have been amazing.
We only got like hints of how she felt within it, so maybe she pulled her hand away because she found out she was not happy there, just like she was not happy in the light. She doesn't fit anywhere. But and I think that's why when Ethan finally finds her, she's got all those candles lit because she's trying to bring the light into the dark. You know?
Oh, for sure.
So she's
it was very chapel-like.
Yeah, that too. So I think there would have been an exploration into her darkness, which would have been so interesting.
Mm-hmm. And see, here's my amazing little bitch fit right here, is that, you know, when she said it's truncated, it just made me think, and it's like a trigger word in my head. And I'm just like, you know, John Logan has created a show where people have to be intelligent to enjoy this. You can't be an idiot and watch the show and fully understand everything that's going on and everything that's being said. The references to poets and culture and, you know, the Victorian era and stuff like that, it all takes a little bit of brain power to put it together, you know? So his fans, the people who make up the fan base of Penny Dreadful, are smart. And for him to sit there and just be like, it was only supposed to end like this. It was only going to be 3 seasons. Now you're asking me to be a dumbass and believe you. No, it doesn't fit. You know? Anyway, let's move on.
No, I agree.
Okay, so Ethan awakens, dreaming of Vanessa, possibly because he says her name, and he discovers Kaitane is also awakening. He is angered by this revelation of Kaitane cursing Ethan as a werewolf. Kaitane explains that it was to give Ethan the power to save all people, that he claimed Ethan for God. Ethan angrily manhandles Kaitane, condemning him for cursing him, because as a result, he has murdered so many people and his heart is poisoned. Kaitane says he gave Ethan the power to save her. This gets through to Ethan a little bit. Furthermore, Kaitane talks again of the end of days prophecy and how Ethan will stop running tonight and accept the destiny that God has granted. Ethan says he will do what is necessary to save her.
Werewolf on mitzvah.
All right, so I've got it. I mean, I know I keep going on, but there are several things that just disconnect me from these last two episodes, and this is another one. And it's only the part to where he keeps harping about how he did it for God, and, you know, he's made him God's wolf because he's Native American, and we've seen a prophecy from the Apaches saying that he's gonna, so I would more like him go, you know, go, I did it for our tribe, for you to save the world, because there's the prophecy of it, that he's kind of a Christian.
He does.
Didn't fit for
me. He does say that, though. He says, he brings up the Apache myth briefly, and then he says, I originally was doing it for my tribe, but I realized actually that I needed to do it for all people, not just.
Well, I get that. And see, I'm good with that if they had stopped it there, but that he's like now going, well, I did it for God.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
So you're saying that doesn't gel. That doesn't.
He shouldn't have to say that to Ethan just because Ethan's been adopted into his family. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't, it would be weird for me.
Well, just him wanting to save all people is noble enough. I guess not try to exalt it in a way that's not quite believable.
So it could have been left out. You know, he could have just used a vaguer terminology and said, I gave you this to save everybody, not just my people, like I thought I was going
to
do.
Exactly. And it just kind of struck home to me like, okay, you know, just it. But because on second watch, I was already kind of like, you know, it stuck even more. But the first time I watched it, it was like, okay, this doesn't make sense, you know.
So now back at Bedlam with Renfield, Dr. Seward prepares Renfield for some mind ripping. She uses Malcolm Murray's walking stick to drum him into the recesses of his memory. She asks, where are we, Renfield? What are we seeing? He begins to describe various sounds, sights, and smells. Dr. Seward now is walking with him in his memory.
Now, at first I thought that the syringe that she used to kind of poke him, because he was like, you know, don't mess with my brain, you cunt. I think that's what he said. Don't quote me on that.
Yeah, that's what he said.
You're and good. So she's hitting him up with some sort of like blue serum, or at least it looked blue. And I thought for a second that she had gotten it from Frankenstein. And I was like, well,
oh, that would have been amazing.
You know,
but
it was just a sedative to kind of get him in that mood. It was, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he could just kind of calm down and be suggestive to what she was trying to do.
Yeah. That would have been pretty cool.
It was like
though.
Sodium pentothal or something like that.
Yeah.
Renfield calls Dr. Seward mother. He asks for forgiveness. He wishes they could have been friends and that he would have been better off if someone had cared for him. He believes that she will be his friend.
I like that, because this strikes to me, I've said it many times over the course of the 3 seasons, that I feel like what's at the core of this show is a certain amount of kindness between people that is happening amidst the most horrible backdrop you can possibly imagine. And so this is another instance of that, and I really liked it. And I really loved how Renfield just went into all the specifics and details. He's like, I was smoking opium with yellow devils, and I planted my seed in unworthy whores and stuff like that. And you're like, you know, Dr. Seward is probably like, ooh, TMI. But, you know.
At Dorian's, Lily walks in slowly to find Justine's corpse and Dorian standing quietly. She is upset that her enterprise has once again resulted in another dead child. Dorian talks of the wicked secret of the immortal, loneliness, loss of desire, passion, still life, a perfect unchanging portrait of yourself. Small price to pay for immortal perfection, isn't it? At this, Lily smiles bitterly, or is this the smile of recognition of the Dorian that she knows and loves? She walks over to him, kisses him, and says she hopes they watch over him, referring to all of his lifeless, beautiful portraits. He says that she will be back and that he will be there. He will always be there. She turns on his gramophone as she exits, and we, the viewers, also say goodbye to Dorian, who is backlit and framed by his window pane.
Mm-hmm. Okay. My question to you guys is Lily going to return at some point? Do you think she'll come back?
It would be nice because we would get another, that could be another spinoff. It would be nice.
But what do you think, though? I mean, do you, like, in regards to immortality, because here you've got somebody who's been immortal for however long. Dorian Gray's been alive for I don't know how long. And like he told Justine, I've seen 1,000 lilies come and go, and they burn bright and they fade out and blah, 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 blah. And he's just jaded and he's just over it and the whole nine yards. Do you think that Lily is going to run a certain course in her life and then realize that what Dorian was saying about the absence of passion and the absence of, yes, even caring for other beings is what you have to assume as an immortal because of all the things, you know, saying that, like, you take lovers and then they become old and toothless and bent and incontinent and, you know, they become senile and they die, but you remain the same. You remain ageless and beautiful.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would make sense that she would go back, you know, but I think it would be like 100 years, you know, 150. It would take a while.
But the opposite of that is, do we hold out hope that Lily actually finds a different way to handle immortality and doesn't use it as a curse, but rather sees it as a mantle of something more divine and just appealing to the better angels of her nature rather than.
We've seen what happens already. She stays in London. And in the late, early 2000s, she meets the doctor. They go on some wild and crazy adventures. It explains why she never dies in this show. It's perfect.
And then she marries.
And then you don't need Dorian.
She marries the doctor's clone. So then, and she's happily ever after. And
Well, we might see Dorian. He could be the face of Bo.
That's Jack Harkness, though, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And every now and then, when her and the doctor are doing it, she says Dorian. And it's no big deal, you know.
No big deal. Yeah, I hope so. You know, there would be a lot of possibilities for whoever picked the show up to do several different kinds of spinoffs with them. You know, you could put them in any era after that, the 50s, the 40s, you know, there's a lot of cool storylines they could do with the pair. So cross our fingers, you know, I'm bargaining again.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why it's like Catriona, who's a time traveler, possibly, if her name is a hint towards what she's, you know, doing in her haircut and her clothing. She could be traveling time and seeing all these dreadfuls with the exception of, because then Malcolm Murray could be like Alan Quatermain and be traveling with her throughout time.
Exactly.
Because that happens.
And they had some chemistry. Yeah.
So then that way, that's what keeps them alive through time because they're actually time traveling and they can still visit with the rest of the dreadful.
Ooh, and that could be why they time travel is to go find every incarnation of Vanessa. You know, because she gets reborn over and over.
That would be cool. I like that. Victor won't be there because he's.
That's okay.
Hyde won't be there, but yeah.
But if you time travel, you have a time traveling machine.
Yeah.
So Victor could be there.
Yeah.
And Malcolm Murray could be there. You know, it'd be cool.
And the monster, John Clare, could be there.
Oh, I'd bring him everywhere.
He's immortal, so he'll be there.
Oh, that's true too.
He was probably a roadie for The Cure in the 80s. So, you know.
Why not?
Then Marilyn Manson after that and Ozzy for sure in the 70s.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, why stop at roadie? Be like Lestat, be a rock star, you know?
Right.
So now at Jekyll's lab, Victor is packing up his things. Dr. Jekyll is annoyed at Victor's sentimentalism. He has always been this way. Victor argues that their plan with Lily was monstrous. Jekyll intends to cure all the inmates at Bedlam, trying to act like his whole endeavor is noble. Victor says scientific achievement will not bring Jekyll happiness or respect. That isn't the world they live in. Jekyll says he creates his own world and self. Victor fears there is a dark road ahead for him. Like Dorian says to Lily, Jekyll tells Victor there will always be a place for him there. Jekyll informs Victor of his father's death, and Victor calls him by his proper title, which is now Lord Hyde.
What? I was disappointed that that was what the build-up with him was, to have the Sith title be placed in front of Hyde. You know, it was like, at least make him get mad, because there's an option they could have done. He could have gotten mad, grabbed the serum, and injected him to himself, and let there be a crazy reaction, and he monsters out, busts through a wall, and he's gone.
Well, this is why I didn't believe the title card at the end, because of this. Here he is saying he's Lord Hyde, and that's it? That's all we're going to get? That?
There's a certain amount of reality attached to any time there's a season ending or a show ending that leaves certain character stories untied up and unfinished. But the prevailing sense of disappointment that you feel as the viewer doesn't really let you, like, put that into your calculus as far as how you're judging the episode. But I do agree with what Em is saying at this point, that this is really a telltale sign that there was more to come, but we're getting truncated.
Yeah, well, this is like having Dr. Banner in I can't remember if it's Bruce or David from the TV show and the movie, Bruce. But it's like having Bruce Banner in an Avengers movie and then never letting him Hulk out.
Right.
You know, you would have this same feeling of, well, why the fuck is he in there in the first place?
That's how I feel about it.
If you're
John
not even
going
to give me a little tiny taste after showing me the drugs, let me at least taste it. Then why the fuck is it in front of me? You know, it's ridiculous.
Good analogy, actually.
That's what I was talking about. I think I said this earlier in the season around the first couple of episodes, and I was like, I want to see John Clare go off on Dracula like Hulk did to Loki in the Avengers movie. Just slam him around for a little bit, you know, and then maybe it's Ethan that kills him off, fulfilling some sort of prophecy and saving Vanessa. But instead, you know, I always talk about how this show does the unexpected. I really didn't expect any of this. So it's staying consistent at the very least.
Yeah. Okay. Well, but also the thing the show does is metaphor. So could it be like Lord Hyde and him kind of like exalting in his need for creating his own world and his own self? Could it be more of a metaphor, this Hyde character, rather than being the actual Hyde from the Victorian novel?
It would be in keeping with Logan's sense of intellectualism, I think.
Well, I could buy this if they didn't already show me fucking vampires, werewolves, right. Witchy Poo-Tang, devil worshippers. Then it would be all right. But you've already showed me fucking supernatural. Show me Hyde in all of his glory. Show me a little piece of Hyde, like in the old Hulk TV show where he starts to turn into the Hulk and you just see his eye turn green. Show me that. I'm fine with it. Show me something. We even had somebody take the serum and we never knew what happened to him. For all we know, he's playing posies in Ireland. You know, it's like, come on, give me something. Otherwise, don't show me. The whole Hyde character, if you think about it, did absolutely nothing for the show. What did he do? Keep Victor busy? Because we didn't
Pretty
get to
much.
See Brona get changed. He just, he was Victor's brosif. You know, they're like, oh, dude, let's hang out again because all my friends don't want to hang out with me anymore. It's ridiculous. Just have Victor getting high in his house this whole time and we would have had the same effect.
So that just is further proof that there was more to the storyline for Jekyll Hyde character, and that his introduction and the you could have gotten to the point where you got Victor and Lily some other way. So really all you can do is assume that the reason why Jekyll was there in the first place was to say, okay, well, he created this serum that is going to make crazy people not so crazy. So then Victor's going to use it because he wants to do what he wants to do with Lily. But
exactly.
He could have come to that on his own. Why introduce this whole other character that has his own backstory and past and everything, and then not complete it? So, Logan, we know you're lying.
Yeah.
Renfield and Seward's inward search culminates with Renfield being regretful of never have been in love. He asks Seward if she loves him, and before she has to answer, she discovers a clue to Ives' whereabouts. Renfield gets no love at all as a result.
That was kind of sad. She saw what she needed to see, and she was out of there.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, you would love me, right? And she's just like, shut up, shut up. What does this sign say? And then she reads the sign, and then they're off to see the wizard. So,
see, despite the pity that I felt for him and the fact that he sometimes looked like Michael from Grease 2, I would not have been able to say, yes, I love you too, because it would have been a lie and I would have been creeped out by it. So I would have been like happy to get a clue to get the fuck out too.
I agree with that.
I wouldn't have told him. I wouldn't have been like, oh, yeah, I love you. I'd be like, yeah, I mean, if I got drunk enough, I might hit it. But, you know, that's about it.
And it was disappointing that she saw the sign, you know, but that's all right.
It was disappointing.
Yeah, I think so. Because then why, if she could do that and she was really there with Vanessa, then why was she questioning?
I bring that up. I think I read it here. Oh, I said sewer. Mm-hmm. Seward has a hidden power that she can actually see in another's mind. If so, why was she convinced that Ives was manifesting three personalities then?
Exactly.
Yeah, so the series may have taken the cake on creating more questions than giving answers. Gripe, gripe, gripe.
Yeah, it's just like Kaitane, you know, just the little thing that's like, wait a second, she can do this the whole time. What the French toast, man? Come on. Come on.
That's a really good point. I didn't think of that. So why was she doubting Vanessa at all? She should have been in there, you know. I mean,
well, she was.
She was there. So why did she doubt her? You know, if she could take the sign that she sees in Renfield's, you know, haze as a sign of like, okay, that's where Vanessa is. Let's go there. I recognize it, blah, blah, blah. Why did she just not take everything for a fact that she saw in Vanessa's cell? Because what it just lets you know that there was more to the story. I'm sounding like a goddamn broken record at this point. You know what I'm going to say here. So let's just move on.
I know.
All right. Malcolm Murray, Seward, and Catriona encounter Dr. Frankenstein as they exit Renfield's room at Bedlam. He is now conveniently caught up in their current. Marjorie talks of how small Jack's body looks after death, like a bird more than a child. And this made me think of the hours, and I'll talk about that here a little bit later. John Clare wonders, how could life be so terrible to one so young? And he says, Flint is the heart of the world. An atheist in the making, if not already. John Clare wants to give him a proper burial. Marjorie does not want to bury him, but would rather John Clare take Jack back to Dr. Frankenstein. John Clare is horrified at her request and argues against it. She insists. John Clare does not want him to be unnatural and hated like himself, but Marjorie gives him an ultimatum. For him to return with Jack alive or do not return at all. Bring him back as he was or turn from this house forever.
Now, I understand where John Clare's coming from. It makes sense. And I like that they kept him true to his good-hearted self going, I can't have my son live eternity, A, as a child, and B, as a monster.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it was really, the whole scene was really heartfelt and beautiful. And it did. It made sense because, I mean, I can understand that. I've lost people, and you want to try and do something like that. And I've even lost a pet this last year. And if I could bring them back, I totally would. I've even joked about cloning, you know. So it's like, I get it. But I think in time she would have understood if he had brought him back why you don't do something like that. Which is brought up at like Interviewing a Vampire, you know, with the little girl that's brought back. And she's a total monster, you know. So at least it was too... how you would expect a grieving parent would handle, you know? So I actually really liked this scene. It was his storyline was some of my favorite throughout this season. Cause we got to see a little bit of at least, you know, some resolution for him.
I felt like she should have been, I understand her impulse to say what she said and to want that to be done. If Dr. Frankenstein was like somebody that they knew and that hadn't happened to John Clare. Like if he was still human and he still just worked a regular factory job or something like that. And then she, you know, she was like, let's take him to this Frankenstein guy and see what he can do. You know what I mean? It's a chance. We have to take it. But he's back from the dead and he knows the horrors of what's going to happen. There's no guarantee your memory's going to come back. You become a monster. And like you said, you're going to be a kid for the rest of your life. So it's like he had all of the reasons right there at hand.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and she was just so clouded by it that, you know, and then she kind of like said, I can only look at your face if you do what I'm asking you to do. That's the only reason that I could tolerate you. So she's actually confirming his greatest fear that he would appear to be a monster to her.
Yeah.
And so that's shitty enough in itself. So I don't blame him for just taking the body and dumping it in the Thames and then being like, I'm out, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he could have actually given him a proper burial.
Like he said he was
like
good.
He said he was
yeah, good. Why didn't he do that?
There I agree.
What's that? What's up
I
with
agree.
That?
Yeah. I know. That doesn't make sense either, but maybe he was just like, fuck it. Let me just move on, you know? But I totally agree. That was the worst part about it.
I had a thought about that because it's almost like it's, you know, when you have dreams and you dream yourself in a body of water, it's like supposedly you're immersed in your consciousness. And so maybe he's like submerging that child self of his because he was reborn again in Victor's lab with mm-hmm. no one there to care for him. You know, it was, and he was shunned at that time. And he had that whole, like all of his like emotional trauma stems from that particular moment. And so it's almost like he's putting that to rest when he submerges his child down into the water.
I agree.
That's a Ooh, good that's way good. To look at it because it redeems it mm-hmm. from what he was just saying before, you know, about wanting to give him a proper burial, because there's a certain few points in these last couple of episodes where it feels like three different people wrote it and they didn't confer with each other on certain points. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They didn't get like the little details down. Like no one person had editorial control because there's certain details that slip out and you're like, well, wait a minute. What about that? So that, you know, when you can put a really sympathetic spin on it like that, I like it a lot more.
Okay, so now the majority of the Dreadfuls are making their way towards Dracula's lair. Too bad John Clare is not with them. Ethan and K-Town split from the group. Seward arms herself, ready to face random gunplay. For some reason, I took umbrage with the word random. I'm like, why did the word random have to be in there?
Well, it's cliche in a lot of movies, you know, also to where it's like, I'm an American. I know how to use guns. You know, that's what it felt like to me. Like, don't worry. But at the same time, she's also a doctor. She's how, I mean, just because she's from that time from New York, why is she so familiar with guns? I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. You know, it's not like she's running around. Everybody in the United States are running around at that time, jimming and jangling pistols really? Everywhere. You know, so it's like, well, now she's willing to go fight thralls when 2 days ago she didn't even believe in them.
So Malcolm Murray looks super sweet in his hat, coat, and walking stick. Just want to point out. They walk through a tunnel into a room with meat-hooked bodies. I already mentioned how some of the butts look weird. Soon they are faced with Dracula, who is framed by an arched balcony. His thralls are soon surrounding the gang, and the Dreadfuls raise their guns. Dracula says that Ives wishes them to live, so leave while he allows it.
Which is exactly what Dorian had said to the whores in his house. He told them to get out, and then they didn't kind of hop to it. And he was like, take your trinkets, take your bullshit, and go. Leave while I allow it. So that was kind of a nice like shadow of what was said by Dorian in the previous episode.
Meanwhile, Ethan and Kaitane continue through the tunnels. Malcolm Murray has some questions about Mina for Dracula. Dracula's answers inspire Malcolm Murray to die fighting instead of leaving. He tells the rest they should go. They stay. Seward saying, fuck him.
I'm not going to lie. I would have been like, all right, sweet, because I didn't feel like getting eaten by these motherfuckers today.
Sure?
I'm going to go ahead and
Are
go.
Are you sure that we can go? Because I mean,
which I'll is stay. What I think Frankenstein would have done also, because...
You know, you're just playing like that whole thing guy. Like, I'll stay if you want me to. I mean, I can stay, but if you really want me to go.
Yeah, right. If it's what you need me to do. But
it's up to you, man. Just let me know as you're creeping backwards, you know.
Malcolm Murray fires at Dracula and the battle begins. It was satisfying to watch Catriona with the knives, especially when she shink, shink, shink the thrall. Victor and Gunn still do not get along so well, as we discovered in season one. He does a little better with an iron rod, but that doesn't last very long either. Soon they are surrounded, and Ethan and K-Town make it into the room, and the fighting begins anew. Ethan demands, where is she, to Dracula, and soon the Dreadfuls begin to take on Dracula, and they're taking on him in turns, facing him in some hand-to-hand. This gives Ethan opportunity to steal away and find Vanessa. He finds her candle lit, cold, and darkly beautiful. She is the flint at the heart of the world, and she can bear it no longer. He tells her she is not alone and how he came close to the abyss, and yet he still found God waiting for him. She does not believe that God waits for her and that she needs to end it so that there will be peace on earth. She tells him that he must help her defeat the forces of darkness, pleading him to let it end. She puts the gun in his hand and says, with a kiss. He says, with a kiss and with love. He kisses her, and he begins to recite the Lord's Prayer. Her reaction to this was so moving. Soon she is reciting with him, and she finishes the litany on her own. After she says amen, there is but a moment, and he fulfills her request. As she is dying in his arms, she says she sees their Lord. When Ethan's face begins to break up into tears, that's when my floodgates opened while writing this recap. So
I think a lot of people had to call the Whambulance at that point.
Yeah.
Not this guy. I was pissed as shit because they trick you in the simple fact that it's like, okay, he starts doing the Lord Prayer, and I'm like, oh, instead of killing her, he's bringing her back. He's bringing her back. He's bringing her back. We're going to get them walking out together, and they kick over some candles, and some shit catches fire, and then they're actually going to get our fight scene with Dracula. But no. No, we get a dumbass shooting her. Like, I mean, who knows? He could have had the chance. You know, it's like, it was ridiculous. At least have Vanessa kill Dracula Vader style or something. You know, it was the most of all the shows. Yeah, of all the shows.
And throws him down
on the candles. No. But of all the shows I've seen where there's fight scenes at the end, and even in this show, how great everything else has been done. This was the single most boring 10 minutes of the series I've ever seen.
Wow.
Because if it wasn't for Catiana and the way she fought, it was just wrong for me. You've got a guy who's been a master of fighting, and he's a fallen angel, and he's super powerful, but he doesn't kill any of the dreadfuls. He should have been snapping necks and ripping arms apart. Something supernatural. We never saw Dracula do anything supernatural other than his ghoulies that
That's
are running
true.
Around.
We didn't even see his true form.
No, exactly. All he did was kind of like push him and kick him like he was the Terminator from the second one and he wasn't allowed to kill anybody. You know, oh, I promised. So it made me mad at the beginning of that fight. It's like, what the fuck? Why is he just kill these motherfuckers, man? They're in your house. They're disrespecting you. Kill one of them and I would feel okay. Victor should have died and Dr. Seward or Dr. What's her name should have died.
Dr. Seward.
Seward, yeah, I was right. So it made me mad. And then when Ethan just gives up and kills her, and I get it, it was a beautiful scene, but I was already in hate mode at this point because I knew I was getting robbed, you know. And then at the end, when they come back out, it's just Ethan holding the body, and nobody's like, what the fuck did you do, man? We're here to save her. And Dracula's just gone like a puppy. Like, oh, I'm out. He should have screamed and really gone apeshit and killed everybody.
The biggest disappointment in this scene for me wasn't even necessarily that Ethan gave in to Vanessa's wishes to die at that point. I can kind of see that from the point of view of this is never going to stop. Until I'm dead, either Dracula or Satan is going to be hounding me to the ends of the earth. So I can get that. But what pissed me off the most and what left me disappointed in that 25% that I spoke of earlier in the podcast was the fact that JC never got to shine. Forget about Ethan wolfing out and fighting Dracula mano a mano. You know, that would have been great. You know, in Dracula's natural form and Ethan, you know, being the werewolf, that would have been super awesome. But I would have loved to see, like, you know, when they're all backed together, you know, back to back and like they've got the guns pointed out. That's when Ethan and K-Town kind of come up from the sewers and start, you know, fighting. They're the cavalry. I would have loved to see John Clare somehow, some way. There's so many holes in this episode that this wouldn't have mattered really. So he just
jump from like a balcony down or something.
Yeah, he just comes in and he just starts cracking skulls. That would have been awesome. And we have this superpowered undead immortal. I mean, who's going to win in a fight between him and Dracula?
And you know what else, too, they could have done that would have even been okay? The devil's getting shortchanged out of all this. Have him make an attempt to help the dreadfuls and maybe send some thralls to help them fight, or even have him fight the devil or Dracula, you know, because he's losing out. He's losing the game at this point. Have something other than what we got. I love Penny Dreadful. I mean, everything has been wonderful until the last 10 minutes. And it was just like, give me something better, which made me feel like they did that just to piss the fans off so they don't try and get anything else. I don't know. I was super disappointed. And if it wasn't for Eva Green's amazing acting in that last scene, it would have been a total watch because it was phenomenal. I mean, but anything she does in this show has been absolutely 150% every time she's on screen. So thank goodness we got 5 minutes of her in a 2-hour finale. That was disappointing because if she had been in it maybe a little bit more, it would have been better.
Well, I didn't cry at the scene on first watch because I was under the delusion that we were going to get more. So, and I was just more of confused of like, wait, what's happening? What's going on? Mm-hmm. Why, what? She's dead? So it wasn't until like rewatch that I cried, but because I knew it was final. But I, you know, even when I was trying to understand, or I was trying to come up with alternatives to the end thing, because I didn't want to believe it at first before Showtime put the official word out, I was like, well, maybe, like, because, you know, Malcolm Murray's talking about reincarnation, she's going to be reincarnated, or, like, you know, they're still going to bring all the Dreadfuls back, and she had to die because they made me think of the hours when John Clare and his wife are looking over their dead son's body and how small his body looked like a bird. And Virginia Woolf says that actually about a bird in the hours. And there's a character in the hours that has to die so everybody else can live in this other kind of different kind of way. But so I was like, yeah, that's what's going on here. But nope.
On second watch, I didn't watch past them going in to fight Dracula. I stopped it. I couldn't do it. I honestly couldn't watch it a second time.
Yeah, there's some people who can't do. I think Bib has actually said she can't rewatch them right now at all. Like, she's so pissed. Mm-mm.
I've got a theory.
Yeah.
If no other cable station picks this up, this is the end, except for whatever we get in graphic novels a la Buffy style with Joss Whedon doing Buffy season 8 in graphic novel form, which will be perfectly acceptable. But
I'd read it.
If this does get picked up, what's going to happen is the one thing that Vanessa asked Dracula not to do was to kill these people, right? We know that's true. So what's going to happen is Lyle is going to come back from Egypt, from Cairo, and the fog and the miasma and stuff like that is still going to be there, even though we saw it recede and stuff, because this is in their minds at this point in time. And what's going to happen is this was Dracula's way of manipulating them and making them think that this was the end to the story, because he knew that he couldn't kill them as per her wish, but that they would keep trying to get to him and to kill him and to thwart him and everything else. So it's going to be one of those Dallas situations where they just get woken up out of this stupor and they realize that all this shit is going on. She's still alive. And then they can go, and Lyle's the one that wakes them up out of it.
I love it. So they never actually went.
None of this happened. None of it really.
They all
happened.
Just passed None of it out. Really happened. Like, they're all standing in the room.
It's
and
a glamour.
Out.
It's just a glamour. I'm totally good with that. Put on them to get them to. Stop
I feel so
fighting.
Much better. That's how it happened in my head from here on out.
The only
out.
Reason why I would be good with that is just because of the fact that there is a show that is continuing it. But other than that, like. All the emotional trauma I just went through, for it to actually have happened, that would piss me off.
I would be okay for 12 more episodes hey, of evil
we've
Vanessa.
We've had that happen on like a micro scale before. Remember when John Crichton put the pulse pistol to Aaron Soon's head and fired, and it turned out that she was the mechanical dummy?
Hey, it happened in Vikings too, whenever What's-Her-Name shot at Bjorn.
Yeah,
if he fell in the water and we thought he had killed her.
It happens a lot. It's just done very, very much smaller scale. This would be big. This would be something that
to
would
bring it
big.
Back. I would be all
it's
right.
Like
with
a,
it.
It's like a system restore on a computer. This is your point right here. So if we go, if we go and we get another one, they can go back to that point and just start right then and be like, okay, now we have to really get her.
Yeah, or even forget about those two episodes at all and just pick it up at episode 8. Fuck it. We rewrote it. We're sorry.
Victor's like, I just had the weirdest dream. And Malcolm Murray was there. And K-Town was there.
And then K-Town just pops him. Shut up.
Ethan's Toto. All
right. I'll get you, my pretty, and your little lupus day, too.
So Malcolm Murray's face is now purpled as he struggles to breathe because Dracula is choking him to death. Mercifully, this ends when Dracula senses his loss and he stops choking Malcolm Murray. He turns to see Ethan holding Vanessa and retreats unnoticed and not to be seen again. All the Dreadfuls stand to gaze up at Ethan and Vanessa, and the sun breaks through, bathing our Dreadfuls in shafts of light. Maybe they are now born anew and cleansed of their sins that have oppressed them so during this show's run, now that Vanessa has sacrificed her life for them. So the fog recedes and London begins to clean itself up. At the Malcolm Murray estate, Malcolm Murray deals with his grief by talking about reincarnation. He asks if such a thing is possible. Ethan believes that Ives is at peace because it would be cruel for her to suffer anymore. Dr. Frankenstein agrees with this and then stands up to leave and tells Malcolm Murray he will see him in the morning. Another thing that made me think we were going to get more. Because
the reincarnation did for me. It's like, well, all they got to do is have another woman that maybe Vanessa, it's not Vanessa Ives, but it could be any character play the part of Vanessa now. So, hey, you know, if Eva Green's not in it, it would be awful, but, you know, there's other actresses that could fill in the shoes and possibly give us some more. So who knows?
So Victor gestures to Ethan to meet him in the foyer. Dr. Frankenstein shows his concern for Malcolm Murray and Ethan, and then before departing, he hugs Ethan.
That was sweet. Mm-hmm. I like that.
It would have been cool if he had been like, oh, and before I had to get something off my chest. Remember your girlfriend? I snuffed her out and turned her into a Frankenstein monster. All right, see you guys later. I'm going to go ahead and go. And closes the door, and Ethan's just standing there like,
he what? Says it super wait, fast, what? Like a disclaimer on the radio. Yeah. I snuffed her out and I turned her into. All right, see you later.
Side effects, maybe. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, this product is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any illness.
And she might kill you in your sleep.
The Malcolm Murray estate is now sunlit like we have never seen it before. Ethan walks up to Ives' room and sits against her empty wall, the one that was once home to her crucifix. It is only fitting because he was her true savior in the end. Later that evening, Malcolm Murray finds Ethan still sitting there and sits with him. They have a future together. They are family.
Another glimmer of hope for a whole something else. Thank goodness.
Their lives go on, but we can't see that. We're not going to be able to watch. Yeah.
Fan fiction. Denied. Bib fan fiction. That's what I want to read.
So John Clare walks his muslin-wrapped son out into the Thames. His voice narrates a Wordsworth poem as we see Ives' coffin being loaded into a carriage. John Clare watches from the shadows as he is wont to do. The remaining Dreadfuls pay their respects, and they all walk away in their own time. With Malcolm Murray and Ethan still remaining, John Clare continues to look on. Malcolm Murray and Ethan depart, and John Clare now takes the opportunity to pay his respects. Whither is fled the visionary gleam? Where is it now? The glory and the dream? That's fucking right. Where is this damn visionary gleam? Where is the glory and the dream? Tell me, John Logan, you dark lord who giveth and taketh away.
Shame. Shame on you.
So, refresh my memory. Was Victor there? He was one of the people at the site, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He had a bowler.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He had a bowler and he walks away. We missed a good opportunity here for John Clare to look at him and be like, demon, you know, and then just kind of duck down, him. You know, and then Victor's looking around like, well, who said that?
Or he just walks up while during the funeral and stands next to Victor.
Or puts his arm around him.
They just kind of look at each other and he's like, whoa.
He just kind of, he grabs him like, you know, Gilligan, it's all right, little buddy. It's all right.
Yeah. I mean, dude, you know you're immortal. You've been through so much this season from going all the way to wherever you were in the Arctic and then walking back, killing kids, whatever. What is he afraid of at this point? He should have just strolled right in and stood with the rest of the Dreadfuls and paid his respect.
One thing that would have to be considered with storytelling on this point is Victor is the only person who would recognize him, right? And there would have to be this explanation to why this huge, creepy-looking, gothic guy is standing there at Vanessa Ives, like, How does he know Vanessa? And so Victor would then have to have this big piece of exposition that would just not be something that the audience wants to hear right now. So it kind of...
I want to hear it.
It kind of makes...
Damn it.
It kind of makes sense that they keep him back because it's...
I know. But I would have
liked some recognition between him and Victor. Like he sees him and then just kind of nods. You know, and they nod at each other like they've made peace. Like, I'm not going to try to kill you. I'm not going to try to make you make me a mate. And then he says, hey, you're my first creation. I hope everything goes good for you, bud. That kind of thing.
Well, not all end up being revealed, you know, because nobody that's still alive saw, other than K-Town, saw Ethan Wolf out. So they don't know he's a werewolf. And it's just like none of them know that Victor has created monsters. So they have been able to keep their secrets in the end. Where others, you know, everybody knows about Malcolm Murray. I mean, I've outed him at the
seance. Well, he wears it on his sleeves. I kill people. I've done bad things in Africa, and I kill people.
And Lily had her big confession to Victor, and, you know.
Out of all the shows that I've ever seen that have actually officially ended, this one is probably the one that's most ripe for more storytelling, I would say.
Absolutely.
So, how's it going to come? How are we going to get it is the question. There's going to be more Penny Dreadful to consume as fans.
Maybe it'll be a movie like Firefly.
Yep, that could be that would be great. That would be
right. I hope personally Netflix picks it up because their original programming lately has been fucking on fire. I just started watching fucking Voltron and it's amazing. And it's Netflix that put it together. It's actual Netflix Voltron, phenomenal. And if they can pull off something like that, not to mention all their other shows too. I don't want people to think I'm like sucking Voltron's dick right now.
But I'm thinking
I'm just using it as a point. You know, I'm just saying that if they can pull something like that off, I think they can do it. And I mean, they've pulled off a lot of shows. Bloodlines is amazing. I mean, there's a ton of original programming that they're doing that would be amazing. If anybody could do it, they could. I think Hulu is going to get the first shot.
I'm halfway through the second season of Daredevil. Oh man. It is so good. Is so good. So I mean, the look at the popularity of House of Cards, Orange is the New Black. People, you know, you have your different opinions on these shows, whether season one's better than season three, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But these shows have tons and tons of watchers, not because people already pay for Netflix, so they go, what the fuck, I'll watch it anyway, but because they're good shows. You know, they're
and they're winning awards with them now. They're legit. Yeah. They're fucking legit.
That would probably be the best.
But I really do think Hulu's going to get the first shot because Showtime being a part of Hulu, maybe they'll be the ones, which is okay. I mean, they have some good programming also. So either one, and as long as they keep some of the character of the actors and they, you know, maybe John Logan doesn't do it. Who knows?
That's the thing.
It would be
depending
nice.
Depending on how long it takes to get something like that up and going, people could sign on to other projects and might not be available.
Exactly.
And that's what happened to Arrested Development. And so then a lot of people couldn't be filmed at the same time. So you had this weird disjointed, you know, season four with Arrested Development. So
yeah.
I'm offering my services right now. I'll help you write. I'll play Frankenstein if you need me to. If you can't do it, you
Why
know,
right? Frankenstein?
What's that?
Why Frankenstein?
Well, because if I wear a hairpiece, that's the character that I'd probably, the only character that I'd be able to pull off physical-wise, you know.
Well, you don't want hairpiece,
We just have a shaved head Frankenstein, that's all.
No, it's a joke. It's supposed to be like herpes, but hairpiece.
Hairpiece.
It went right over my hairpiece. So stupid, God.
We would end up being, I mean, let's be for real. We would end up being thralls.
Oh, yeah. I would.
Or dead body. Dead body number two and dead body number one. Or
victim. I would just be like an extra, extra. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be cool to be in Bedlam.
Yeah.
I'd like that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, we've got more to talk about for the bonus pod. And if you guys have never listened to them before, you should go back and listen to bonus pods in other seasons. I am always super excited. They are some of the best things I think we do because we have fun, we joke around, we play games, we have a special guest showing up for it.
Double D's, Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, the professor.
Right.
This is going to be the first time that we've done a quiz where all three of us get to do the answers because usually somebody administers the quiz and the other two people do the answers, and then whoever loses has to eat something disgusting. And if you remember from last season of Penny Dreadful, Paul and I had to eat crickets.
You had to eat a chocolate-covered scorpion.
It was a scorpion.
Yes, what? Crickets were a different
crickets
show.
Were a different show, that's right. Anyway, we're putting nasty shit in our mouths. And I think there was a picture of it last year on Twitter or something like that,
yes,
or Facebook or whatever. And this year, I will be eating a cricket again because there's no way I'm going to win a quiz that Dunkin' Donuts is going to be administering.
Fuck that. I'm winning. It'll be the first year I won't have to eat anything disgusting because usually I always felt bad. So it's like, all right, we'll do the quiz. And if I lose, I'll eat one with you. So it's not too bad. So I'm on. I'm winning this one. I'm studying. Y'all are in fucking trouble.
Yeah, you always
winning.
Hate with the loser because you were the one giving the quiz.
Yeah.
Exactly. I always kind of felt bad that I was making y'all eat disgusting
foods. You should feel
bad about that. So it's okay. And we've got a special announcement that we might be making about future podcasts. So you have to tune in. If you tuned in with us all this way, you have to tune in this week coming up on the bonus podcast.
If you've never heard a No Ship Network bonus podcast for any of the other shows that we've done, including this one, I can't hype it enough. You won't know what you're missing until you tune in.
We better bring the entertainment with the way you guys are talking about this.
We always do.
We do it anyway. I'm not worried about it. It's the bonus cast. We've never not had a good bonus cast ever. Spartacus is still my favorite. It's on it's saved on my iPod, but our other ones have been just as good. I mean, we've never had a bad one. So
you made some pretty ridiculous stuff on the Spartacus bonus podcast, I remember.
Oh, it's my absolute
remember
favorite.
I made like a top five hilarious list for what the show could have been called. Remember that one?
We talked about guys we would fuck on the show.
Yeah,
on that
yeah
one. That's ridiculous. And it's hilarious. Because yeah, you kind of start feeling a little, you start explaining yourself a little too much.
Yeah,
because I remember you it's running awesome your fingers through Dustin Clare's hair, I think came yes up.
Yes, yeah, there was all kinds of really awkward things that we joked about. It's perfect, in
my
opinion.
I put in
opinion
some good Crixus samples, too.
Yeah.
Because we did our Dear Crixus letters.
Dear right Crixus.
Oh, I forgot about that.
What is this shit?
So good.
Should we do so a Dear good John Clare letter?
Possibly. That would be good.
All right, guys. So be sure to tune in for our bonus podcast, which will be recorded in a couple of days, and we're going to get to, like we said already, we're going to get to all your feedback, and it will be just thee and us discussing all the fun stuff about Penny Dreadful. All right, this has been a No Ship Network podcast. I'm your host, Steve.
I'm your host, Paul.
And I am your host, Em.
Rest in peace, Vanessa Ives.